And welcome to the Portland City Council meeting. Would you please call the roll, Carla, and we will take up this item.
Novick?
Here.
Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Saltzman? Hales?
Here. And would you read the item, and then I'll talk about our process this afternoon.
Okay. Item 1255, consider the proposal of Sam Rodriguez, Mill Creek Residential Trust, LLC, and the recommendation from the hearings officer for approval to change the comprehensive plan map designation from high-density multi-dwelling to central commercial and the zoning map designation from RHD, high-density multi-dwelling residential with a design overlay zone to CXD, central commercial with design overlay zone for property in the vicinity of Southwest 20th and 19th Avenues and Southwest Main and Madison Streets, LU14-105-474-CPZC, and item 1256, amend the comprehensive plan map designation and amend the zoning map for property in the vicinity of Southwest 20th and 19th Avenues and Southwest Main and Madison Streets at the request of Sam Rodriguez, Mill Creek Residential Trust, LLC, LU14-105-474-CPZC.
Okay, thank you. Well, welcome, everyone. So this is kind of an unusual situation in that we're conducting a land use hearing, which we interrupted for some weeks and now are resuming. That's not actually all that normal, but it's what we're in this moment. And we have a very stylized, formalized process that we follow under state law when we conduct land use hearings, and we're going to do that. But I'm going to flex it just a little bit in what I hope will be both openness and fairness in terms of what we're going on, what's going on. So first of all, there were people who signed up last time and who didn't get to speak. They get to speak. The attorney for the applicant gets a rebuttal at the end of the process, and they still get that. But I want to amend that just slightly, and that is, and we can't allow new testimony. We can't allow people who didn't sign up last time to testify this time. Otherwise, we reopen the whole enchilada. So, but I do want to allow the attorney for the Friends of Goose Hollow say 3 minutes at the end of that testimony period to summarize any key points that you'd like. Again, just because there's been a long break in the process here for counsel to have a balanced understanding of the arguments on both sides of this case. But before all that, we're going to first call staff up to summarize what the first hearing covered, the open record period, the need to continue hearing testimony, any of those issues. I'm also going to call up Portland Bureau of Transportation staff to talk about transportation and parking related guidance. I know there were some meetings with the parties. Summarize anything that might have come out of that discussion that should be considered by the council in making this decision. And then I think we also have some questions for the city attorney about the how previous conditional use master plan conditions apply to the decision in front of the council today. So that's the process we're going to follow. First staff, council questions and discussion with staff. Then the people who signed up before who didn't get a chance to speak, the attorney for the Friends of Goose Hollow, and then the attorney for the applicant to do rebuttal. Hope
we'll
that makes sense.
We'll then break for dinner, and we'll have the annual holiday party, and we'll resume the testimony.
That's right,
deliberation.
Coffee at 10:30. No, I don't think it'll take that long. So, Sheila, if you would come up, please. Or I'm sorry, first we need to do, also because it's been a while, we need to ask members of the council if any of us have had ex parte contacts or any potential conflicts of interest to report.
Yes, I had lunch with David and Nancy Cutler, and Nancy Cutler was the one of the people who was in Goose Hollow when the very first parking permit system went into effect. We did not discuss the specifics of this case, but I did get some general history.
Okay, anything else? I visited the site again this week with my staff, spoke to no one on either side of the case, but was just once again refamiliarizing myself with the physical setting of the decision. Okay, anyone have any questions about our objectivity here? So that's on the record. Sheila Fregoli, if you'd come up, please, and catch us up on the process and the decision in front of us.
Good afternoon. Again, I'm Sheila Fregoli, the assigned planner for this review. Just to note that Bob Haley and Kurt Kruger from the Portland Bureau of Transportation are in attendance and are available for questions. as you so choose. And just so that we can get back up to speed, I'll offer a brief presentation.
Good.
To recap, we're here to continue the land use hearing for a requested comprehensive plan map and zoning map amendment for the site known as Block 7. The request is to change the zoning from RH, High Density Residential, to CX, Central Commercial. We are here to continue the hearing that occurred on October 1st. At that hearing, you heard from staff, the applicant, and a large group of interested persons. The hearing ended without completing the public testimony phase. It is my understanding that there are 7 people on the October 1st sign-in list that are ready to offer testimony. I should note that the continued hearing was originally set for October 30th, but was rescheduled to today. The record has been held open, and as you know, approximately 25 additional letters have been received. After the testimony and the applicant's rebuttal, as well as the chief opponent's final comments, you may close the record and begin your deliberation. To quickly summarize, the owner, the Multnomah Athletic Club, and the applicant, Sam Rodriguez of Mill Creek Residential Trust, are requesting the map amendments so they may develop a residential-type building with approximately 260 residential units and 191 accessory parking spaces. Also proposed are 16 short-stay suites for MAC Club guests. This map amendment is necessary in order to propose additional accessory parking to serve the MAC Club. If this request is approved, the applicant intends to submit a Central City Parking Review application for the construction of 225 below-grade parking spaces. The spaces will serve the existing MAC facility. Based upon the applicable approval criteria, Hearings Officer Helm is recommending approval of the request. His recommendation comes with a number of conditions. Condition B addresses the city's no net housing loss policy. Condition E is intended to address key transportation policies. And the other recommended conditions are intended to limit the future development and use of that building to match the applicant's proposal. Both you and the hearings officer have received extensive public comments. Some of the key points stated by the opponents are the development will remove important open space and habitat area. The hotel suites are not compatible in a residential area. There will be on-street parking impacts created by the residential development. The opponents contend that the proposed 191 parking spaces are not adequate to serve the approximate 260 residential units. Opponents contend that the proposed MAC parking is not warranted, and they contend that the MAC Club should manage its existing supply. They assert that the applicant's transportation analysis was insufficient and that the MAC parking will create additional traffic as well as pedestrian and bicycle hazards. They note or argue that the MAC conditional use master plan that was approved in the early 1990s still has status and that it should apply to the Block 7 proposal. And then finally, one of the major arguments from opponents is that the MAC is breaking a promise it made about the development of Block 7. The supporters' major points are that the scale of the project is the same as what would be allowed in the RH zone, that the proposal will not generate additional traffic, and lastly, they note that the MAC Club is not expanding. They contend that the additional MAC parking will address a current deficiency and will reduce traffic and parking impacts in the immediate area. That concludes my presentation. Questions?
Thank you. Any questions for Sheila? Thanks very much. We may have more later on.
Yes.
And then let me do call Bob and Kurt up, please, to talk about the transportation and parking-related issues and any summary that you'd like to provide on your discussion with the parties. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor, Commissioners. Kurt Kruger with the Portland Bureau of Transportation. Willing to answer any parking-related specific questions. What I did want to give council a little background was some of the history in the last 6 weeks, 2 months now since the last hearing. As urged by this council and past councils, when you're wrestling with a really tough land use case, so often staff are asked to go back and see if there's a compromise that can be reached. Is there middle ground that can be reached amongst parties? Well, we proposed that. I invited all three parties. There's three parties at this table. There's the developer, Sam Rodriguez. There's the MAC Club. And then there's the neighborhood representatives. We put all three of us in a room, or all four of us in a room, twice to have some really gut-wrenching, tough conversations about what it is that we really want. If this parking goes in, how would it operate? How would it get used? What would interested parties like to have in a deal? Unfortunately, we couldn't come to that compromise. I wish I had something more positive I could bring to you. There was a lot of discussions. I think there's some continuing conversations that you're going to hear about today related to other properties in the area where parking might be proposed or recommended or supported by the neighborhood association. And I think there's the start of some conversations, but I don't think that's germane to the property that we're dealing with and the issue that we're dealing with today. But my point in this history is we had a really good set of conversations. They were very pleasant conversations. They were tough. They were diligent. They were focused. I really applauded all parties coming to the table trying to find some compromise. We couldn't find that deal to bring to council.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Novick.
Kurt, I understand that one option might be to try to put this proceeding on hold and ask the MAC to go through the Central City parking review process before making this decision. And I wanted to ask you, does that sound like a viable option, and what are the details of that process? What would the MAC Club have to go through in the Central City parking review process?
That's a great question. Let me remind the council of what this project would have to go through in an effort to get to a full approval and a building to be built. So this is step one of four steps that could be in front of this body. This is the comprehensive plan map request, zone change request. The next would be the Central City parking review. The third would be a design review, which on appeal would come back to this body. And the fourth, there's a tunnel that's proposed to connect these two garages. That is proposed under a public right-of-way, which requires a major encroachment, which requires City Council approval. The applicant, and they could probably talk to this better than I can, chose not to pursue the Central City parking review concurrently with this land use proceeding for fear of a procedural risk that you couldn't apply for a Central City parking review on a property that's not allowed for what they were asking for. So they made a conscious decision to put this project first, wait for this decision, and then move forward with the Central City parking review. We had many discussions with the applicant about recommending that both be done at the same time. I don't want to speak for the applicant, but I don't see a reason why that effort couldn't occur to help advise this body in this decision.
Thank you. Bob, anything you wanted to add?
No, I was just going to add that I gave you each little presentation, just a big overview of Central City parking, not germane to this particular case, but some background.
Right. How it works. Thank you.
Actually, can you just sort of describe what the Central City parking review process looks like, what sort of information they would have to provide?
Certainly. As you probably or may not know, Central City has many sub-districts in the Central City plan for parking reviews, and there are maximums, and depending on what your location is and what your land use is, this site is located in the Goose Hollow sub-district. So there is, procedurally, they would come in for another pre-application conference. There would be another public hearing in front of the hearings officer. That decision could stand right there, but if appealed, it would come back to City Council. There's general approval criteria for this particular review was in 33808.100. And I'll read you the first criteria. There's like three pages, so I won't go into all of them. But the one of them is where you probably will get a lot of testimony. And that is that the proposal will not by itself or in combination with other parking facilities in the area significantly lessen the overall desired character of the area. The desired character is determined by city adopted area, neighborhood, and development plans, and by the comprehensive plan designations and the neighborhood and the base zone itself. So in addition to that, there is a criteria for adequacy of transportation facilities, which would be a truly full-blown traffic study. We would be looking at a much more detailed demand analysis of just what is the actual demand of parking that the MAC Club has. What is their existing mode splits? What are their TDM measures, both for staff, and what can they possibly do for the future, the members themselves? There is a recommended condition in this comp plan zone map amendment that they provide a very detailed traffic or TDM plan and parking management plan as part of their application for the Central City Parking Review that has to have the support and approval of Portland's transportation option sections, which is houses our TDM specialist. So it would be a joint effort between the MAC Club and Development Review and our transportation options to come up with an agreement of what we think are adequate TDM measures and parking management measures.
And who does the review?
Of the, well, it would be part of the Central City Parking Review that would be adopted or approved or denied by the hearings officer and eventually come to council. So you would be the final judge on appeal of whether or not you felt those parking management strategies and TDMs were robust and adequate enough.
But Peabot has agrees with the applicant ahead of time on what that is?
No, no. We just say, as part of your complete application for a Central City Parking Review, you must have a TDM and parking management plan that has been approved by PDOT's options section.
Okay. Other questions? Thank you all. We might have others as we go forward. Thank you. Okay, then let's turn next to our city attorney, because there was a great deal of testimony about the potential bearing of previous master plan approvals on this decision, and we asked Catherine Beaumont to research that question for the council and report back.
Good afternoon, Catherine Beaumont, City Attorney's Office. As the mayor's indicated, one issue raised at the prior hearing was the status of the MAC's 1992 master plan. At the last hearing, the council heard very divergent opinions on this issue. The MAC asserts the master plan terminated in 1995 when the hearings officer approved a zone change by which the main clubhouse and the Salmon Street parking garage properties became outright permitted uses in the CXD zone. This zone change did not affect Block 7, which has been zoned for high-density residential use since the 1980s. The principal opponent, Friends of Goose Hollow, argues the master plan remains effective and prohibits the MAC from applying for a comprehensive plan map amendment and zone change to facilitate the proposed redevelopment of Block 7 with residential uses, parking, and a short-stay hotel use. The MAC's argument is based on both the zoning code and the master plan itself. The zoning code states that when a conditional use approved after 1981 becomes an allowed use, any conditions of approval attached to the conditional use no longer apply. The MAC contends the clubhouse and the Salmon Street parking garage were originally approved as conditional uses, and preparation of a master plan was required as a condition of these conditional use approvals. The master plan was also approved in 1992 in the same manner as a conditional use master plan. When the 1995 zone change approval changed the zoning status of the clubhouse and the Salmon Street garage to permitted uses, the MAC contends the master plan terminated as a matter of law under the zoning code. Additionally, the master plan itself states that it terminates when it no longer applies as a conditional use. Based on this language, the MAC argues the master plan ceased to be effective when the clubhouse and the Salmon Street garage ceased to be conditional uses as a result of the zone change. And in my opinion, both arguments are plausible and provide a basis for concluding the master plan is no longer effective. However, even if the master plan could somehow still be viewed as effective, at least as to Block 7, it does not preclude the MAC from pursuing the current comprehensive plan map amendment and zone change. The 1992 master plan identified two development scenarios for the Block 7 and called them possible future uses and phrased the discussion of these scenarios as conceptual only. One of the scenarios described development of a mixed-use project consisting of a possible daycare facility, a primarily residential use, club facilities such as parking, and retail uses. The plan expressly anticipated that these possible future uses would need to comply with the code applicable at the time of the development, including the then applicable approval criteria, standards, conditions, and requirements for appropriate traffic and parking studies. In its current application, the MAC appears to be doing what it is allowed to do under the master plan for Block 7, and there is no language in the master plan that expressly prohibits the MAC from applying for future comprehensive plan map amendments or zone changes.
Questions?
Catherine, a couple of questions, and thank you for the very clear legal analysis. So as I understand your advice to us, the master plan arguably does not apply, but even if it did, it by its terms contemplated arguably the use that's before us. Is that correct?
Correct.
And is there any distinction that we should draw between the mixed use? Let me pull the language, excuse me one sec. Is it relevant to our consideration that in addition to residential and mixed use, there is a contemplated short-term stay hotel? Is that consistent with what was allowed under the master plan?
To the extent that the master plan contemplated retail uses, although it phrased them as neighborhood retail uses, but it did contemplate some type of retail use. And under the CXD zoning, short stay hotel would be considered a retail sales and service use. That is consistent.
Okay. And you've given us an argument in the alternative. So it does,
yes.
Arguably the master plan doesn't apply, but if it did, this arguably falls within the four corners of the master plan.
Yes.
And so that may be, that may have the effect of making my next question irrelevant, but I'm still interested in your legal opinion, because we do have an exhibit in the record in which the MAC Club in 1995, in a letter to planning, said they would not discontinue the master plan. They would continue to honor its terms. Is that a legally binding promise, or does that have some other legal status?
I think it simply exists as a piece of evidence in the record of that proceeding. The MAC tried to, in that zone change proceeding, the MAC asked the hearings officer to rule on the status of the master plan, and the hearings officer expressly declined to do that, citing the section of the zoning code that I've referenced, and simply saying that it will apply by its own terms.
But if we were to accept the argument that's been put forth about a broken promise, we would have to first conclude that that promise contained in the letter and the proceedings back in the 90s has some legal significance, and then we'd have to conclude that the application before us is inconsistent with the promise.
I think you'd have to conclude that the promise was the master plan itself, was embodied in the master plan.
Was embodied in the master plan. And then we would have to conclude that this is inconsistent with the master plan.
Correct.
Oh, we're going to give the attorney a chance to respond to that later. Thank you very much.
Okay. Other questions for Catherine? Thank you. All right. Then let's return, Carl, to the sign-up sheet. I think there were seven people who signed up who have not yet gotten a chance to speak from the original hearing. So let's call them, please.
Okay. The first three are Nicholas Clark, John Beal, and Casey Milne.
Hello, my name is Nicholas Clark. I respect every one of you and honor to testify today. My family owns and runs a tavern one block from Block 7. You can imagine that the increase in residents is thrilling. I'm also on the GHFL, the Goose Hall Foothills League. On October 8th, the GHFL conducted a membership meeting. The members voted 109-7 in opposition to the zone change for Block 7. In terms of turnout, that is 116 members. Again, 109-7 to oppose the zone change. On November 20th, we had our annual meeting, membership meeting, and the election of seven new directors. On November 25th, the GHFL board met and unanimously voted against the rezoning of Block 7 from RH to CX. We want to keep our neighborhood consistent with the Central City Plan and retain the chunk zoned RH. We do not want it changed. This block is to remain RH according to the 2008 2035 plan submitted to the city by the GHFL. A change in zoning on this block is against the new 2035 plan. The increased parking for the MAC allows them to satisfy larger conventions and events and have a cushion for peak member usage. However, they have absolutely no data to show that what their parking demand is. The report from Kittleson doesn't cover parking demand. However, if this project makes it through council, they will have to go through the Central City parking review. Why haven't they done this? Money? This is very viable for it. The zone change is contingent on the Central City parking review. Also, they spend less annually on security and parking than on the salary of their general manager alone. Norm Rich has told members that one way to keep the members' fees low has been events. These events compete with others, the convention center, hotels, whose job it is to have conventions and events. Much of the parking that the general manager is looking for is for these events. 67% of MAC members are satisfied with parking. As a neighborhood, we are not only looking at the impact of the MAC on traffic and parking, but the expansion of what we consider the MAC campus. We don't want to see the piecemeal sprawl of the campus. Perhaps under a clearer MAC vision, we could, as a neighborhood, negotiate. We didn't want the parking garage in the 80s, and we didn't want it in the 90s, and we don't want it now. Are we going to see a similar project on 20th and on 21st where they own property? Is it going to be more expansion? Okay, on to the tunnel. The developer changed his original plans early on to include the tunnel. I would certainly have BES take, the Bureau of Environmental Services, take a second look at their report. There exists a combined main coming down from Vista. If this cannot be adequately siphoned around, under, or over the tunnel, I personally do not want to smell the sewage. In a memorandum dated, this is another part of the subject matter. In a memorandum dated December 1st, 2014, Mr. Yannick and Mr. Hall responded to the following questions posed by Mayor Hales and the city commissioners. What impact does the proposed MAC parking have on vehicle queuing at the entrance of the Salmon Street garage? This memo simply asserts anecdotally that vehicle queuing will be reduced. The applicant failed to mention that traffic consultant Kittleson did not conduct a queuing analysis of any kind. The burden of proof is on the applicant to quantify the impact of queuing at both garage entrances. Please note that Cal Toth has addressed the queuing problem in his submitted written testimony. One significant issue, which I will... I'm good.
Go ahead and thank wrap you. Up. All right, thank you very much. Good afternoon. August, who's next? Go ahead. What sorry.
Hello, my name is Connie Kirk. I'm actually reading the testimony of Mr. John Beal, so these are his words, not mine. Any emphasis represents the punctuation in his testimony. I'm a former member of the Goose Hollow Foothills League and longtime area resident. I hereby submit my reasons for opposing the Mill Creek MAC proposal to rezone Block 7. The MAC is demanding another waiver on Block 7, again ignoring its longtime promises to the city and to Goose Hollow to not build MAC parking where housing once stood. The MAC is a not-for-profit, enjoying tax-exempt status as a social and recreation entity. Although the club has capped membership for years, it is evident to the casual observer that the club is instead expanding its hospitality and parking facilities to enable a convention-like business competing unfairly with for-profit convention centers who do pay taxes or who are supported by the city. Meanwhile, this unstated mission of the MAC is being accomplished at the expense of livability for Goose Hollow residents. And I ask, why? Why should the city agree to the MAC building more parking in the Central City Zone? After all, over 9,000 parking spaces exist in downtown Portland. And less than 3/4 of a mile away from the club, there's a smart park with available parking for every MAC member. It's hard to imagine why MAC members can't walk the extra 3/4 of a mile prior to their workout. Isn't the MAC an athletic club? The Timbers have proven that the peak use principle for parking works. and that fans will use other transportation modes, for example, TriMet. So why does the MAC not follow suit? Finally, I want to share an experience that graphically demonstrates the MAC's true colors. Some years ago, I planned to purchase the last house standing on Block 7. The woman who owned it had attached a covenant in the property that it was not to be sold to the MAC. When I was about to make a full price offer after her death, a curious chain of events transpired. The realtor initially confirmed my offer was in, and a few hours later he called back to say the house was sold to someone else. I soon discovered that once word about my interest got out, the MAC found a straw buyer to purchase the house, reselling it to the MAC. This perfectly sound house was soon torn down, and the MAC citing unsafe conditions. I believe the MAC deceived the neighborhood and usurped our codes. The MAC needs to understand it is sharing in beauty and infrastructure of our neighborhood, not owning it. Just because the MAC wants to have something, this does not mean they should get it. The MAC has not met the burden of proof to justify this zone change request. The club has not demonstrated they actually need the parking and hotel suites to satisfy their mission as an athletic club. And the club has not demonstrated that the zone change proposal will do no harm to Goose Hollow residents. Finally, City Council should hold the MAC to its 30-year promise to the city and to Goose Hollow not to build more MAC parking on Block 7. I strongly urge City Council to not approve this zone change request on Block 7. Respectfully yours, John Beal. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon.
Hi. My name is Casey Milne. I live across from Block 7. I serve on the Goose Hollow Foothills League Board of Directors. I'm a MAC member and a FOG Friends of Goose Hollow member as well. Previous testimony has identified parking problems for the MAC, Providence Park, Lincoln High School, and the general neighborhood. Regardless of who claims a parking problem, the Goose Hollow neighborhood should be ground zero for alternative modes of transportation and transit-oriented development. A zone change to authorize additional parking at Block 7 is contrary to the city's hard work to discourage driving. This kind of commercial expansion proposed by the MAC to cater to special event guests into a residentially zoned area defies the comprehensive plan policies. You heard much testimony to this effect on October 1, and I will briefly highlight a few of the goals and policies that would be violated. Specifically, Policy 2.17, Goal 3, and Goal 4. These goals and policies are aimed at transit-oriented development and away from single-occupancy vehicles. They are designed to protect residential quality, which would be destroyed by this zone change. Further, construction of small apartments will not contribute to the diversity in housing called for by these goals by not providing family, workforce, or low-income housing. Approval of this application would commit the central city to parking for MAC and opens the door for the rest of the city to be covered with unlimited amounts of accessory parking. Friends of Goose Hollow does not believe that after all the testimony from the neighborhood related to inconsistency with the comprehensive plan, that the council can find the policies weigh in favor of this application. But if the city still finds the requested increase in commercial parking spaces for the MAC is justified, it doesn't need to rezone a property in the middle of a residential neighborhood to provide a private club where there are suitable, if not better, alternatives. And I would like to highlight the map that is here. We have a number of, in fact, I'll finish talking and then I'll point those out. I think I've got an extra minute. The offer from Harsh Investments for additional parking at Portland Towers is available now. 18th and Salmon, also known as the Butler Block, is owned by TriMet and is already zoned CX. This site would also serve Lincoln High School, Providence Park, in addition to the MAC. Tom Walsh, former CEO of TriMet, sees this block as viable and knows how this site could be developed. The city is well-versed in the kind of negotiations that would be needed and could get this done. This property could support affordable housing, possibly even senior housing, with the parking that MAC is seeking. This is a very viable option and worthy of action. The City Council should continue this application to January 2015 and should direct its expert staff to craft the neighborhood solution to the parking problem, rather than approving a piecemeal zone change for the MAC at the wrong location. And this is a combination of Jennifer Breger's and my letters that are submitted today.
Okay, thank you.
Just to point out, here's Providence Park, the MAC Club,
right.
Their parking lot. Here is the Butler Block.
Right.
What you would see is you've got crosswalks with lights. The other location for Portland Towers is here. And just one side, if they were to get all of those parking places and it was filled up with one of the special events, imagine the pedestrian traffic crossing the street and the impact that would have on the 20th and 18th versus Butler Block, which would be a direct, much easier to get directions to and would also not have that much impact.
Thank you very much. Thank you all.
Thank you.
The next three are Roger Leachman, Jerry Powell, and Anita Sande.
Good afternoon. Welcome.
Are we ready?
Yes, please.
My name is Roger Leachman. I am a resident of Southwest Vista in Goose Hollow. This past month, I was elected to the GHFL board. I was a founding member of my neighborhood association in Virginia. We were formed to fight the hospital's plan to demolish a block of Victorian homes for, guess what? Parking. We were successful because they decided to be a good neighbor. Fast forward, I found that while we were saving those homes in Charlottesville, the MAX management was buying one by one the same irreplaceable housing stock on Block 7 and demolishing them for, what else? Parking. Let us consider the MAC management's pursuit of parking. It starts with their premise, undemonstrated, unexamined, and without data, that the MAC needs parking. At my university, they would have failed the unit on logic. Does not faze them, though. If you're weak on the facts, you can always misrepresent and obfuscate. Example, the mayor astutely asked regarding the proposed tunnel, what about the sewer? Mr. Janik, I quote directly, there is no sewer in that street. Bull feathers, there is. It's terracotta, and it was built in 1891. Mr. Janik told a fib or was inexcusably ignorant. Example, in their recent memo, they reassert vehicular queuing will be reduced. There is no data. Kittleson did no queuing analysis. So it is wishful thinking or flimflam. The burden of proof was on them. It was not met. The MAC management's pursuit of more parking is a want, not a need. Nor do they have a right to more parking, as Mrs. Frugoli's memo of the 24th of October established. The MAC management cannot even demonstrate a want on the part of their members. Their own surveys indicate a comfortable majority satisfied with their current parking. So the management misrepresents the desires of their own members, just as they attempted in every venue up to now to misrepresent the position of the neighborhood until they could do so no longer. We had more MAC members testifying here on our behalf than they did. Fact, not fiction. What's the size of the minority of the MAC membership who might want more parking? No one knows. No data, just anecdotes. Whatever this minority's size, though, I suggest they are not fixated, like the MAC management, on rezoning Block 7. They would be just as content with the MAC parcel on 20th or 21st, or the harsh proposal, which Mrs. Milne has already described to you. It is a tiny, tiny group within the MAC, consisting of the management, that pushes for the breaking of their promise. The MAC management seeks to betray the covenant it made to council before Mr. Lindbergh and the rest. Council then saw the pattern and said their purpose was to hold the MAC to it. The only question remaining for the neighborhood is whether or not we will experience an ultimate betrayal. I hope not. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Mr. Mayor, Commissioners, I'm Jerry Powell. I live in one of four small Queen Anne houses across the street from Block 7 at 1926 Southwest Madison Street. Well, I guess that means I'm biased. But I'm also a professional planner, as most of you know. And I've been working in the public domain for 40 years in that capacity. I'm also a 40-year resident of Goose Hollow, a Goose Hollow Foothills League director, and a former planning chair, a 25-year member of the MAC. That also means I'm conflicted. What you have before you is a PAPA. It's a post-acknowledgement plan amendment. I mean, yeah, it's also a zone change, but the really significant part is the post-acknowledgement plan amendment. It's also interesting that it started out as a quasi-judicial hearing in front of the hearings officer who applied a certain set of criteria for his decision. And it's now, as I understand it, a legislative issue which has a completely different set of criteria. Generally, when a PAPA has been proposed, it's been in a fairly simple situation. Should we have a golf course or should we have exclusive farms? Should we have exclusive industrial or should we allow employment industrial? Pretty easy things to decide, mostly within the same category of land use. This isn't that. Research has shown that only once has there been a residential to commercial PAPA proposed in Portland. It's about 5 years ago. In 1909, someone on Southeast Belmont wanted to develop commercial use, and he had residential property. He successfully got the change to commercial use. Today on that site, there is a food cart pod, a surface parking lot, and a CD store. That change from a plan that had been vetted and continually proved through 40 years of, no, 30 years of comprehensive plan experience was changed to something else in the wisdom of the council, not to be critical here, but it's now undevelopable. The concept that developer had didn't work. Now what do you do with it? Just pointing out that PAPAs are unusual, they're difficult to get, and that's for a reason. The PAPA requested here is to allow a plan amendment that most certainly will allow new uses that will conflict with particular values in the comprehensive plan. Ken Helm admitted that, particularly with respect to Goal 6. That, when you consider the balancing act language in Title 33, is ignored because there were two projects, really, proposed. One is the background situation, RH zoning. It would allow a building of a certain size. The other one is the proposed project. CX zoning, again, limiting voluntarily the building to that same certain size. Yet, there's a difference. Mr. Helms' decision and the staff analysis preceding that concentrated on the similarities between these two projects. Naturally, you've got the same residential project. You're going to have very, very similar impacts. What's the difference? The difference is the parking. Steve Janik's proposal his cover letter for this proposal, admitted that same thing. He said the difference between these things really is the parking. Now, that is, it's not just a small issue. It's the issue.
Jerry, you've used your time, so I just want to get your closure. Is that your closing thought?
Actually, the closing thought is that in terms of a legislative issue, you have a much steeper path to tread. It requires that all of the goals be satisfied, not a balancing.
Got that. Thank you. Welcome.
Good afternoon. Dear Mr. Mayor and members of the City Council, my name is Anita Sandy. I live downtown and frequently visit my parents who live in Goose Hollow. I have plenty of experience accompanying them on foot through their neighborhood. My parents are in their 90s and my dad walks with a walker. They cannot cross the street quickly. They also cannot jump out of the way of distracted or hurrying drivers. It is challenging and sometimes scary that cars fly by them so close and so fast when they are walking right around their home. This is particularly noticeable around the entrances to the Mac Club's parking structure, where drivers are intent on where they are headed and not particularly focused on the pedestrians who share the streets and sidewalks. It falls on my parents to avoid them, as the drivers are often unconcerned or unaware that my parents are even there. Every car entering and leaving the Mac Club's parking structure has to cross the sidewalk. Bringing more Mac Club parking into their residential neighborhood would bring more congestion, more pollution, and most importantly, more risk to the pedestrians of Goose Hollow. One of the things that makes Portland famous is its urban growth boundary. To get permission to build its existing parking structure, the Mac Club entered into a parking growth boundary specifically that no parking would be built on Block 7. The Mac Club has other options for expanding their parking that would not have such a negative impact on the heart of the neighborhood. Let them put their parking near the soccer stadium where it will be good for both fans and the Mac Club. But please do not tear up the heart of my parents' neighborhood with any more parking lots. It's a residential neighborhood. Let it be residential. Our city is proud of our urban planning and the livability it fosters. In that spirit, please vote against rezoning Block 7. Voting no for rezoning Block 7 equals voting in support of the livability of the heart of Goose Hollow and its residents, like my parents, who call it home. Thank you for your thoughtful consideration.
Thank you. We have one more, is that right?
Yes, Harvey Black.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. May it please the members of the City Council. I am Harvey Black. I live at 1132 Southwest 19th Avenue, and I'm the real party in interest in this matter. I'm a member of the Multnomah Club, the GHFL, and I'm chair of the Friends of Goose Hollow. I submitted my written testimony to you today, and I submit the memorandum and then just hit the high points. One bit that is not in my written testimony is my story of getting a parking permit from the Multnomah Club. This was just the day before the initial hearing in this matter. I went over there and I said, how many permits do you get per member? And he said four. But if you really need more, you can get them. So that there is the parking management plan of Multnomah Club. They only the MAC management says that they need the parking, and they'd also like the apartments. They are there viable alternatives? 5 years ago, they received an offer from Harsh Investment that owns the Portland Towers across the street that to have long-term leasing of the park, additional parking that they have in there, and they would also refurbish some of their apartments for so they could have rental units. The MAC never even responded to that. But in accordance to the letter that is in the record here from Harsh Investment to the City Council, it's still open. I want to address the whether the master plan is in effect or not, because I haven't seen her opinion. I will not argue with City Council. However, the MAC cannot now claim that the master plan is no longer in effect. In law, it's called equitable estoppel. In other words, they made the representation as shown in Steve Janik's letter of, in 95 and the two letters from the then president of the MAC in 95 to one to the GHFL and one to the city saying, we acknowledge our obligations, including a management plan, and we would we will keep the master plan in effect. This was done because there were some questions at the time that the rezoning that they were going to get on their clubhouse and the garage would cancel the master plan. And so they assured the parties, and when you make assurances like that in order to achieve something, the rezoning, you are stopped or you cannot then come back later, and just because you want a different result, say, it's no longer in effect.
Great, thank you.
And I think that I would ask that the, this hearing be continued to pending the results of the Central City Parking Review as set forth in Ms. Fergoli's letter. That review will see whether the MAC actually needs the parking.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Okay, I think those are all the folks that signed up, but I do want to give legal counsel for the Friends of Goose Hollow an opportunity, as I mentioned, to come up and make any critical points that you think haven't been addressed or clarify anything that we've heard in this process, both at the previous hearing and today, that you want to emphasize. So.
Thank you, Mayor Hales and Commissioners. Jennifer Brager, representing Friends of Goose Hollow, and Harvey Black. And as you've heard over the past two hearings on this matter, Friends of Goose Hollow has raised much question about rezoning a residential use to cater to single-use parking and shown that it's inconsistent with the comprehensive plan. We agree with Commissioner Novick's recommendation and suggestion that the CCPR should be done now before the zone change so that all information is on the table. We've argued that from the beginning to the hearings officer, and we think that it only makes sense. You know, like everyone's been saying today, a zone change is a special thing, and when you start to do conditional use zone changes, it's just going to add more muddle to an already procedurally confused situation about the status of the property. And what happens if the CCPR comes back with some other outcome and you have this condition hanging out there? It's just, it doesn't make logical sense to rush ahead now without having all the facts in front of you. There have been questions about the master plan. It does have a long and sordid, complicated history. I think that you've heard and you've seen in the written testimony that's been submitted that there was support by the neighborhood for the zone change in 1995 based on the representations of the MAC during that application process. It is certainly plausible to read this record and this agreement as a contract of sorts between the city, the neighborhood, and the MAC to govern all of the MAC's property. And you can read about that in the submittal I put in today about the 1991 decision and then the staff report for the 1995 decision. It's very convenient to call the master plan a master plan because there is a conditional use master plan framework, and the hearings officer had said this in its review that, you know, hey, this is what they submitted. It looks like it. this provides really good criteria for me to march through. I'm a hearings officer. I like this. I'm going to analyze it through this lens. There's nothing wrong with that. But what the master plan actually represents is everything that's in that first transcript I submitted to you last time. It's the entire council hearing where people recognized that the neighborhood was on fire and that something needed to be done so that everyone could live together. And notwithstanding that information and how the current proceedings are going, the Friends did, in good faith, meet several times with the applicants to try to come up with a solution here. And PBOT staff has done a great job of starting those discussions. We think that Friends has presented some viable solutions that might take a little more time to develop, but actually represent a neighborhood solution that can be crafted to provide a whole lot of opportunity for a lot of institutional users out there. So combining those further discussions with CCPR review and a delay of this decision, it just makes sense. You know, there is no rush for this. If there is a problem, let's solve it in a methodical way that makes planning sense. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions?
Please. I appreciate your point. And if we were to say the master plan is terminated, that's the easy case. But the harder case is, in my judgment, to say is the alternative argument that Catherine Beaumont gave us, and I want to give you a chance to answer it. That is, assuming the master plan had some legal effect, in what way do you believe the MAC's current application for a comprehensive plan map amendment and zone change for Block 7 is inconsistent with the terms of the master plan?
It's inconsistent because it plans for 225 parking spaces for a commercial use that requires a commercial zone change. The text of the master plan actually describes the possible uses scenario or the
right.
Potential uses. It describes that this will be developed consistent with the RH zone. And that, to me, reflects what was going on with every word that everyone had said all along, which is we're not going to rezone Block 7. We are agreeing to that. And so now here we are trying to rezone Block 7 to allow the commercial parking, and that's the inconsistency.
Fair enough. But is there specific language which says in the master plan that the MAC would not be eligible to rezone, to seek a rezoning? I understand your point. I'm looking at some
of the... I think on page 17 or... it's attachment 5 to one of my letters here on... May 20th, which is page 21, how it's marked, but it says, the club owns most of Block 7, two parcels. I mean, I can read this to you, but if you read it in context, it says, we're going to develop consistent with the RH zone. And to rezone it to commercials, not consistent with the RH zone.
Okay. Other questions? Thank you very much. Okay, now we'll provide the opportunity for legal counsel for the applicant to do rebuttal. Come on up.
Good afternoon, members of the City Council, Mr. Mayor. I'm Steve Janik, representing the applicant, Mill Creek, and with me is my associate, Damian Hall, and Sam Rodriguez. What I'd like to talk about are the responses to the questions you raised in the last hearing. We submitted a memo to you December the 1st, which gave you a detailed explanation of the issues you raised. But I want to just highlight a few things. It's been argued that if we add these additional parking spaces, it'll cause a queuing problem at the entrance off Salmon Street. And it was also argued by our opponents that Kittleson never studied that. That's not accurate. In fact, if you go to a prior memo we submitted that was dated December 1st, we outlined for you on page 3 Kittleson's observations, where they basically said what causes the queuing is when they have to turn people away. And with the additional parking, it would flow more efficiently, and there wouldn't be a queuing problem. I wish Commissioner Novick was here, because I know he's interested in this. The issue is, why didn't we apply for a CCPR at the same time? That was a legal analysis. We submitted and it's in the record, a memo of March 21st, in which we point out, here's the conundrum we have. Nothing in the code allows you to apply for parking in a zone where parking's not allowed. In fact, the code says that if the code is silent on something, then it's prohibited.